Tonight's reading is 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 to 6, which is found on page 1162 of the Church Bibles. Therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. But we have renounced disgraceful, underhanded ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word. But by the open statement of the truth, we would commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ.
Many thanks, Emily. If this is your first time with us, just to say there is an outline of the talk inside your service sheets. You may find that a help. And please do keep open the passage that Emily read to us, so 2 Corinthians 4, verses 1 to 6. It's usually about 6 o'clock in the evening when the phone goes, and I hear someone saying to me, "Hello, Mr. Noddle. How are you today?" And I sort of groan inwardly and I say, "It's actually Mr. Nodder and I'm doing fine and I'm afraid we don't take marketing calls." "Oh, Mr. Noodle, this isn't a marketing call." I say, "Well, what is it then?" "I'm just ringing you with a special offer." And although it's irritating, you can't help but feel sorry for these guys. I mean, what a job. Telesales has got to be one of the worst jobs on the planet. And don't know about you, I just couldn't do it. I mean, you've got this product to sell, and you know that 9 out of 10 people on the other end of the line just aren't in the least bit interested, and they just want to get you off the phone. And sometimes they're polite, and sometimes they're angry, but the bottom line is the same. They're fine as they are, and they don't want what you're offering. Isn't being a Christian a little bit like being in telesales? Isn't this the part of being a Christian that most of us find the hardest? That we're told that we've got this responsibility to pass on this message of good news to other people, and so we try. But the problem is that the vast majority of folk aren't in the least bit interested. And they just want to get us off the phone. And some of them politely decline, and others of them get steamed up. But the bottom line is the same. And as with telesales, at times it can feel like the worst job in the world. And that's why I guess many of us as Christians, we quietly give up telling other people about Jesus and we just conclude that it's not my gift. Well, how can we keep going in getting the gospel out to other people? What could encourage us to stick at it? In what ways is it any different to telesales? Well, our passage today, 2 Corinthians 4, 1 to 6, is the Apostle Paul's explanation of why he keeps going in evangelism. Why, in the words of verse 1, he doesn't lose heart. And we're going to look at 3 things you'll see on the outline there. We'll look at what Satan does and what God does, and then finally what we do. So firstly then, what Satan does. Why is it that people are so apathetic? Why is it that people are so confused about spiritual truth? Well, have a look with me at verse 3. It says, "And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God." The devil, Satan, is described here as the God of this world. So there's only one true God, the God mentioned at the end of verse 4, where it says the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. There's only one true God. But the devil is described here as the God of this world, or the God of this age. He's not divine, but he is very powerful. He's an evil spiritual being who is active in the world. And for a limited time, he's been allowed to exercise a certain amount of authority in this evil age. So I put some references at the bottom, some cross-references. John 12:31, Jesus describes the devil as the ruler of this world. 1 John 4 verse 4 says of him that he is in the world. And 5 verse 19 says that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. Now today's Halloween, of course, and for most people the devil's a figure of fun, figure of fiction. And even as I'm speaking now, there'll be kids roaming the streets in their fancy dress outfits and going to parties dressed in their red costumes with their horns and their pitchforks and so on. But the devil is neither fun nor fiction. He's alive and he's well on planet Earth. If the devil is alive and well, what on earth is he doing? Or what is he doing on Earth? I mean, he seems to be keeping a pretty low profile, we might think. So, I mean, you do hear about people being demon-possessed and strange goings-on in remote other parts of the globe. But here in the UK, apart from, say, the occult, he seems to be keeping a pretty low profile. He's not even on the radar. Do not be deceived. Revelation 12:12 warns us, "Woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short." The devil is alive and well on planet Earth, and he's very angry because he knows that his time is short. And in these verses in 2 Corinthians, the devil shows up on the radar and we see what it is he's up to. So verse 3 says, "Even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God." The God of this age has blinded the minds of the unbelievers. So that's saying that people everywhere, unbelievers, are spiritually in the dark. They can't see the light of the truth. Why? Because they are spiritually blind. Or to be more precise, blinded by the devil. So the devil has blinded their minds so they cannot see the light of the gospel. And of course, we see evidence of this demonic activity all around us. The spiritual lies on the internet, the false religions and philosophies, the wrong thinking that so many people have about spiritual things, the apathy, the indifference of so many people about anything spiritual. Why is it that people have such crazy ideas about God and about how you can get to know him? Why do people say things like, "I like to think of God as," and they just fill in the blankety blank with whatever pops into their minds, as if God was just something that they create? Why can't people see that doing good things cannot possibly get you right with God? Why do people think they're basically good? Why do people follow whatever foolishness people like Richard Dawkins and the like happen to put in print? This is telling us that it's a spiritual problem. They're spiritually blind. They've been blinded by the devil. Now, this spiritual blindness is no respecter of persons. It affects everyone described here as an unbeliever, that is to say, all of us by nature. In 2006, a drama film came out which was called The Land of the Blind. And that would be a fair description of this country. It would be a fair description of the whole world. The Land of the Blind. Do you think it's harder doing evangelism today than in days past? Do you think it's harder today? Apparently back in 1851, almost 40% of the population in the UK attended church. Do you think it's harder to do evangelism now? So the highest voluntary recorded church attendance in England was that recorded in a census taken on Sunday, March the 30th, 1851. Almost 40% of the population in church. I mean, wouldn't evangelism have been so much easier back then? You know, when people had some sort of framework of biblical understanding, whereas nowadays people are just biblically illiterate. Well, yeah, at one level that may have been the case, but at another level, not at all. If you're blind, you're blind. So church-going blind people are just as blind as folks who spend their Sundays washing their car or playing football. The God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers. And it's nothing to do with intelligence. So someone may have a brain the size of a small planet with its own weather system and so on, but still be spiritually blind. So there are brilliant dozens of, you know, brilliant academics who write dozens of books, learned tomes, and they're spiritually blind and they can't see the truth when it's standing right in front of their face. What do you see in this picture? Anything strike you about it? A blind man being led by a woman? Anything strike you? Someone want to call out?
She's blind as well.
She's blind as well. She's holding a white stick. It's the blind leading the blind. And that is the situation that we find ourselves in, that the opinion makers, the leaders, they're as blind as the next person. It's the blind leading the blind. Or on this picture here, it's like these poor soldiers, World War I soldiers, who've been blinded. And they're just following the man in front. Now, what happens if people do that? What happens if the blind lead the blind? Well, what did Jesus say in Matthew 15, verse 14? He said, if the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. It's a parable that's been, someone's made a painting of there. If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. Now, last week, when we were doing this talk on the Chile mine rescue, you may remember that we saw that the Bible uses the pit as a description in the end of hell. And that is why spiritual blindness is so serious. I mean, being physically blind must be a terrible thing. It must be absolutely awful. You know, just imagine if you couldn't read. Imagine if you couldn't, if you got kids, if you couldn't see your kids' faces as they grow up. Or you couldn't see colours. Terrible thing. But spiritual blindness is actually much worse. Because this inability to see the truth, it affects people not just in this life, but in eternity. You may know the name Amy Carmichael. She was a missionary to India. And she famously had a dream all about this. And let me just read part of it to you. It's quite poetic, but I think it's quite powerful. The tom-toms thumped straight on all night, and the darkness shuddered round me like a living, feeling thing. I couldn't go to sleep, so I lay awake and looked, and I saw, as it seemed, this, that I stood on a grassy sward, which I had to look up. It means an area of grass. Grassy sward, short grass. And at my feet, a precipice broke sheer down into infinite space. I looked but saw no bottom, only cloud shapes, black and furiously coiled, and great shadow-shrouded hollows and unfathomable depths. Back I drew, dizzy at the depth. Then I saw forms of people moving single file along the grass. They were making for the edge. There was a woman with a baby in her arms and another little child holding onto her dress. She was on the very verge. And then I saw that she was blind. She lifted her foot for the next step. It trod air. She was over and the children over with her. And oh, the cry as they went over. Then I saw more streams of people flowing from all quarters. All were blind. Stone blind, all made straight for the precipice edge. There were shrieks as they suddenly knew themselves falling, and a tossing up of helpless arms, catching, clutching at empty air. But some went over quietly and fell without a sound. The people fell in their blindness, quite unwarned, and the green grass seemed blood red to me, and the gulf yawned like the mouth of hell. That is why spiritual blindness is so serious, that it means that people walk unawares into eternal judgment. Well, what hope is there? What on earth can any of us do faced with this sort of spiritual blindness? I mean, you may be someone who has become aware even this evening that you are spiritually blind, and that explains your confusion about spiritual things. What hope could there possibly be? Humanly speaking, there is no hope, but with God, we know that anything is possible. So we can't do anything, but God can. And look at how the passage then goes on in verse 5. It says, "For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." Do you remember how the Bible begins? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." and there was light. So all was dark and empty in the beginning, but God spoke and there was light. Well, now look again at what verse 6 says. For God who said, let light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. What God did in the beginning physically is what God does in the present spiritually. What God did in the beginning physically is what God does in the present, is doing in the present spiritually. So he creates light in the darkness of human hearts, in the pitch black of human minds blinded by the devil. So just as in the beginning he spoke and light came into being, so now he just has to speak and dark human hearts are flooded with light. So what is completely impossible for us, for God it is as easy as just speaking. For God it's as easy as getting up in the morning and you throw back the curtains and light floods into the darkened bedroom. It's as easy as that for God. So spiritual blindness is not a difficult thing for God to deal with. The God who created everything from nothing, the God who created light out of darkness with a word, he can very easily create light in dark hearts and dark minds. Now, in case we doubt that, to strengthen our faith that he can do this, we've got all these miracles that God did through Jesus during his ministry. And so, for example, in John chapter 9, we read of this man who was born blind. And he meets Jesus, and Jesus puts some mud on his eyes, and he tells him to go and wash in water, and he does that, and he comes back, and he can see. It's as easy as that. And from that point on in the narrative, the man is referred to as the man who had formerly been blind. He's the ex-blind man. That is the power of God. Just as Isaiah the prophet had prophesied, the eyes of the blind shall be opened. But of course, the blindness that Jesus came to cure wasn't just the physical, it was the spiritual. And the physical miracles of opening eyes, they were just a demonstration of what God can do in a person spiritually. Now, Paul, who wrote this, he knew that better than anyone else, didn't he? And when he wrote chapter 4 here, he must have been thinking, as he wrote this, of his own experience. That dramatic experience that day on the road to Damascus when his life was turned upside down. You remember how Acts 9 records that Saul, as he was then, was off to persecute yet more Christians. And we read that suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him and Jesus appeared to him. And Saul was blinded by the light. And he actually had to be led by the hand, because he was blinded by the light, led by the hand into the city of Damascus. And a Christian by the name of Ananias was sent to him to lay hands on him. And in chapter 9 of Acts, verse 18, we read this. Immediately, something like scales fell from his eyes, and he regained his sight. Now, he regained his sight not just physically, but spiritually. It was clear that from that moment on, he could see spiritually as well, because from that moment on he went around the synagogues proclaiming that Jesus is the Christ, whereas before he'd been persecuting Christians. So the scales had fallen not just from his retinas, but from his heart and his mind as well. That is what God can do, and that is what God does do. The devil has blinded the minds of unbelievers so they cannot see spiritually. God opens people's eyes. He creates light in the darkness, and he alone can do that. You can't, I can't, but God can and he does. Now, on the one hand, that should humble us. It should humble us. Let's not delude ourselves that we can change anybody because we can't. So with our neighbours and our family members and friends and colleagues and so on, who seem so apathetic about spiritual things or so confused spiritually or so hostile, we mustn't for a moment think that we can change them. Don't for a moment think that, you know, maybe if you just mug up on a few more clever arguments and read a few more books, then you'll be able to convince them otherwise. You can't. They're spiritually blind. And only God can deal with that. Can you create light? Can you create light? Have a go. You know, one night, if you can find somewhere dark enough in central London, go outside and say, let there be light. and see what happens. We can't do it, but God can. So on the one hand, it should humble us. On the other hand, it should encourage us. That if God can do this, he can do this in the heart of anyone. So that someone is completely apathetic or confused or hostile today, it doesn't mean that God can't just turn on the light tomorrow. So for God, it's like flicking a light switch. It's that easy. And so what we mustn't do is we mustn't categorize people into likely to become a Christian, unlikely to become a Christian, absolutely impossible, forget it. We mustn't do that, because God just sees one category. God just sees the spiritually blind, and he can turn on the light in any of them. Now, Paul himself is a wonderful testimony to that, isn't it? Isn't he? So he's having Christians imprisoned and killed one day, and then the next day he's proclaiming Jesus as the Christ. And so this is saying we mustn't give up on anyone. We mustn't look at a person's apathy or hostility and just despair. Instead, we need to look at God and his power and have hope. I guess the question is, how big is the God in whom we believe? So is the God in whom we believe the God who said, "Let there be light," and there was light? Well, he's the same today, and he's still in the lighting business. And all over the world, he's flicking switches in human hearts and minds, and lights are coming on. This Genesis 1 creation drama, it's being reenacted in countless lives all over the globe in these mini acts of creation. And so it leaves us with this question, well, what should we do? Sounds like God has got it all sewn up. So do we just wait for God to zap people like he seems to have done with Saul? Or do we perhaps just pray that God will zap people? Well, what does the passage say? Verse 1, the passage began, "Therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we don't lose heart. But we have renounced disgraceful, underhand ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word. But by the open statement of the truth, we would commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God." And then verse 5, "For what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake." What do we do? Open statement of the truth, proclaiming Christ. That's what we're to do, to proclaim the truth about Jesus Christ. Because this is the means that God uses to open blind eyes. Powerful proclamation. So Paul says in verse 5, we proclaim. And sometimes that Greek verb there could be translated as we preach. But we proclaim is actually better, because preaching just makes you think of what I'm doing now, whereas proclaiming is something all of us can be engaged in during the normal course of the everyday. And that is the sense of the word here. The basic idea is being a messenger, passing on a message. Or you could actually use the same word there as of a broadcaster. So, you know, a broadcaster on the 6 o'clock news or whatever, the newsreader. We've got a message. We've got the gospel to pass on to other people. Now, this is the means that God uses to open blind eyes. So notice here how in verse 4, you've got this description of spiritual blindness. And then in verse 6, you've got this description of how God's creative act shines light into people's hearts. Now, how do you get from verse 4 to verse 6? Well, through verse 5. And what does verse 5 say? Sandwiched in between. It says, we proclaim. If you just look at the Apostle Paul and his experience, we know that the Lord appeared directly to Paul, or Saul as he was then. But how would the Lord then reach the rest of the world? Would he keep doing just what he did with Saul, that dramatic experience? Well, what did God say to Paul? In Acts 26:18, he said, "I'm sending you to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God." I'm sending you to open their eyes. How would he do that? Well, through proclamation. The very next thing Paul does after his conversion is he goes around proclaiming Jesus as the Christ in the synagogues. Now, we may not all be full-time evangelists, but we all have these powerful words of the gospel that we can pass on to other people. One One morning last week, some of us were out on the quayside here giving out flyers for a series called Question Time, which is a new midweek lunchtime series starting this week. And we were standing, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, we were standing over on the quayside by the Green Bridge as people were funneling over to the wharf to go to their jobs. And a number of people took them, but one man in particular refused to take one, and he said something off, not very polite, clearly didn't want one. And he walked all the way over the bridge, the Green Bridge, and then he turned around and he walked all the way back over the bridge and said, "So your God needs marketing, does he?" Interesting comment. "So your God needs marketing, does he?" And in a sense, yes, he does. In that the way that God has chosen to open blind eyes is through his people speaking his words of eye-opening power. Now, God could have done it differently. He could have chosen just to zap people without any human intervention. But for whatever reason, that isn't how God has chosen to operate. It's through proclamation. So in Genesis 1, God spoke these powerful creative words, which brought light in the darkness. What are the powerful creative words that God speaks today to bring light into human hearts? Well, they're the words of the gospel. The words of the gospel. So God has spoken his word, which is recorded for us in the Bible. And as we proclaim this message to others, God speaks through it and he creates light. So the gospel message is a powerful creative word of God. It's astonishingly powerful. In fact, the devil quakes before it. It's a weapon against which the devil has no defense. If you've got a Christian person speaking the gospel, Satan's cowering. He's terrified. You know, no wonder the Apostle Paul said, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for salvation." Now, you may be thinking, well, possible question, if verse 3 says our gospel is veiled to those who are perishing, and if verse 4 says that unbelievers are blinded to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel, you may be thinking, well, how can presenting the gospel to them be any use? I mean, they can't see it. They're blind. I guess it's a bit of a conundrum, seems a bit of a paradox, but basically it's saying that God uses this same message they cannot see to open their eyes. Now, this means that this isn't just one message among millions of messages on the planet. It is uniquely powerful to cure spiritual blindness. It means we're not just telesales reps making yet another offer. When we explain the gospel to people, they're hearing, through us, they're hearing the words of God, which have power to bring light and life. Now, it's a wonderful thing when this happens, isn't it? So when someone's eyes are actually opened through the gospel, it is a wonderful thing. Suddenly it all makes sense. Everything falls into place. All of a sudden, it's as if a light has been switched on inside. But for that to happen, people have to hear the gospel. And so we need to proclaim it ourselves, or at the very least, we need to get people to hear it. Earlier in the series, I gave an example of what one man wrote on a website after listening to an online sermon. But it ties in so well with this bit, I'm going to repeat it. He wrote this. He said, "I'm a Jew, and since 2 minutes ago, I believe that Jesus is God. Jesus is Elohim. He who has the Son has life. God used that audio sermon to crush the mind of this stubborn Jew. My eyes went open." Interesting description. "My eyes went open. Just today, I was angry with God. I said to him, 'Why are you letting me search without finding answers?' Well, I found it now. Jesus is Elohim. Praise Jesus, your brother in Christ, Joseph." Now, of the unbelievers who hear the gospel, only some of them have their spiritual blindness cured. And that raises a question, doesn't it? Why is that? So why don't God's powerful creative words in the gospel, why don't they create light in every unbeliever who hears them? Well, the Bible's answer to that is Romans 9, verse 18, which says that God has mercy on whomever he wills. God has mercy on whomever he wills. So in the end, that is God's sovereign will and choice. But our responsibility from this passage is clear, and that is to get the message out and pray for God to open eyes through it. I was sitting at the dinner table on Friday night and noticed that our Marmite jar has got a sticker on it which says spread the love. Have you seen this? Spread the love. It must be terrible being married to somebody who's into teaching the Bible, because all the time you're just suddenly looking at this thinking, hang on a minute, that'd be a good illustration. But spread the love, Marmite. I don't know if you... It's a love or hate thing with Marmite, isn't it? But spread the love, or you could just tweak it a little bit. Spread the gospel. That is the responsibility God has given us to do. Now, how are we to go about doing this? Verse 2 tells us how we're to do it. It says, but we've renounced disgraceful underhand ways. We refuse to practice cunning or to tamper with God's word, but by the open statement of the truth, we would commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God. Open statement of the truth. Full disclosure. Telling the gospel simply and plainly as it is, in language that people will understand. So it's not difficult. Saying, no, things we're to avoid. Dishonesty, deception, distortion. The three D's. So the gospel is revealed in the word. It is the power of God. Not some distortion. Not something which is just a box of juicy carrots making all sorts of promises and no demands or no teaching that might offend. But the simple message. The message that we're rebels against God, heading for his judgment. That God has provided rescue in his son Jesus Christ and through his death for us. That God calls us to turn around and to live with him as our rescuer and our ruler. This simple message through which God opens blind eyes. It says here that with such straightforward speaking, we're to, in verse 2, we're to commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God. That is to say, whether or not they accept the message, it should be plain to them that we're not guilty of dishonesty or deception or distortion. Now, of course, we can read up, and it's a good thing to read up on how to answer people's questions and so on and so forth, but let's not overcomplicate things. In the end, it is the simple message of the gospel which God uses. And if you know that gospel this evening, if you know that, you are already armed with the most powerful weapon on the planet. So if you've learned a simple gospel outline, say like the bridge thing we use here on the barge, if you know that and you could draw that out on a piece of paper, the devil trembles before you. You see, the key thing is to keep the focus of the Bible where the Bible puts it, and that is on Jesus Christ. Look at what verse 5 says. Verse 5 says, for what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. So we're not presenting a package, but a person. We are to proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord, as the rescuer ruler God has appointed. It's him we're to proclaim because the gospel is actually all about him. And so if we haven't talked about Jesus, we can't really have shared the gospel. Because as Romans 1 verse 3 says, the gospel of God is concerning his son. It's all about him. It's about how through his death and resurrection, God has made him Lord. The one in him we are to believe, the one for whom we are to live. Now sometimes, and I'm sure you've had this experience, sometimes we come away from a conversation we've had with someone, and we've maybe told them that we're a Christian, or maybe told them that we go to church, and we perhaps think we've done our bit, and it's a start. But that isn't going to open anyone's eyes. Somehow that person needs to hear the gospel, whether it's through us, or whether from someone that we bring them to hear at an event, or whether it's through a booklet that we give them to read, somehow they've got to hear the gospel if their eyes are going to be opened. Notice that Paul says here, what we proclaim in verse 5, what we proclaim is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ. Not ourselves. See, the false apostles, the false teachers in Corinth, they were putting the spotlight very much on themselves. It's all about them. And that is a giveaway mark of the false teacher. I don't know if you've seen the hoarding advertisings for an event at Excel. I think we mentioned this before. It's called a Night of Bliss with Pastor Chris. A Night of Bliss with Pastor Chris. Now, I don't know anything about this guy, but even without knowing anything more, I'd be extremely suspicious. Because who is he proclaiming? A Night of Bliss with Pastor Chris. I mean, can you imagine the Apostle Paul running some advertising campaign in the first century in Corinth? A night to enthrall with the Apostle Paul. I mean, but in our conversations with people as well, other people shouldn't come away from the conversation thinking how great we are, but how great God is. Because we're just servants, we're just slaves, we're just messengers. And so the final thing we need to do is not to lose heart. And that's in fact where the whole passage began in verse 1. It says, therefore, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. Having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. That's Ice Age, anyway. Comes from having kids. By God's mercy, Paul's saying we have an amazing ministry. That in the land of the blind, you know how the parable goes? In the land of the blind, how does it go on? The one-eyed man is king. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. But if we are believers, we have both eyes wide open, like this little fella behind me. By his mercy, we can see. And God has entrusted to us this gospel message through which he will heal the spiritually blind. Now, what an amazing privilege that is, that God should speak through us his creative words. Now, that isn't telesales. That is adventure. That is awesome that God should do that through people like you and me. Because we have this ministry, Paul says, we don't lose heart. And goodness knows that Paul had reason to lose heart. If you think of the opposition, the suffering he endured in gospel ministry. But he didn't give up because of this amazing, eye-opening ministry that God was doing through him. And so the point for us here this evening is that we mustn't give up on spreading, on promoting the gospel. Don't be surprised if it's hard. The devil hates it. The devil will try to mobilize a rebel world to shut us up and keep our views to ourselves. And I'm sure we'll all have times when we feel discouraged and when we feel tempted just to keep our heads down. But this is saying, do not give up. Keep inviting people to events where they'll hear the gospel explained. The event on Tuesday night this week. The carol services in just 6 weeks' time. Can you believe it? 6 weeks till the carol services. Keep sending links to people of talks online through which they can hear the gospel. Keep praying for opportunities every day to share something of the gospel with people yourself. Or look to pass on a tract or one of these Luke's gospels or something. Just have them in your bag, in your pocket. Explain the gospel to people yourself as well. Don't give up on spreading, on promoting the gospel. And if you're someone who has the gifts and desire to be doing gospel ministry full-time or part-time in a paid capacity, do not ever think that that would be a waste of your talents and a waste of your career, whatever your relatives might think. No doubt many people thought the Apostle Paul had thrown away a brilliant career. He could have been teaching Old Testament at the University of Jerusalem, following in Gamaliel's footsteps and all the rest of it, and he'd thrown it all away for the shame, the scorn of being a gospel minister. And Paul himself, he felt discouraged at times. But gospel ministry is amazing. That you're paid to speak words which cure spiritual blindness and which change people's destiny eternally. Now, gospel ministry is not the short straw. It's not sacrifice. Being a lawyer or a banker or a doctor, for me, that would be sacrifice. That would be the short straw for me. This certainly isn't telesales. This is the best job in the world. But this is saying that all of us, whatever our jobs are, we have this privilege of being engaged in this sort of ministry at whatever level, in the places where God has put us to work and to live. So having this amazing ministry by God's mercy, may we not lose heart. And if at the moment, if you are the unbeliever that this passage refers to, do you know the gospel? Could I encourage you to get to know and to understand the gospel message, the good news about Jesus? Because that is the only way that your spiritual blindness is ever going to be cured. So ask a Christian friend to explain the gospel to you as simply as they can. Take this free copy of Luke's gospel and read it. And pray that God would have mercy on you and open your eyes as he has had mercy on us. Let's pause to pray. We're going to sing in a moment of how God has rescued us from the darkness and brought us into the glory of his light. But before that, we're going to pause and just pray in the quietness of our own hearts and minds, responding to what God has said in his word.